Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. If this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you are pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. And our guests will provide you with advice on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in the entertainment industry. And some of our guests, we have a plethora of guests. Some of them are Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony winners, reality stars, producers, directors, actors, singers, casting directors, talent agents, talent managers, screenwriters, novelists, and on and on and on and on and on. If you listen to the show, we've been on the show for 8 years. We're booked 6 months to a year in advance, and we got the people. The people just keep coming. Great show. If I must say so, my folks, I want to toot my own horn. Now, if they are working professionally in show business, we are going to have them on the show to give you entertainment career advice. And we make sure that our guests are at different stages of their careers, from professionals to beginners. So that means that we are definitely going to have someone on the show who will help you to answer questions about show business. You want to be poor? Come on down. It's basically the motto. Now, you can listen to any of our past guests by going to their archive page on LA Talk Radio. It's latalkradio.com. Just go to Channel 1. Drop-down menu is going to appear. You click Question Reality, and this takes you directly to our archive page. And again, you can play all of our shows directly, or you can download them and listen to them endlessly. As long as you don't just listen to my voice and get Vaseline in a tissue every night, I'm good to go. You can download any of my shows that you want, you sex fiends. Now, our shows are also available for downloads on iTunes under the podcast section and on Stitcher.com. Just go to their websites and type Question Reality Radio in the search box. And if you want to find about our future guests, oh my God, we got some goodies. We got Charlie Coons from CSI Cyber, one of my favorite new shows. He is coming on, and one of my favorite Emmy Award winning directors. I love this woman. Mary Lou Belli is coming on the show. And oh my gosh, who else is coming? There's so many, I can't keep track, but just go to questionrealityradioshow.com and there's a 2015 schedule. Look at it. You can see everybody that's coming on. Lots of casting directors coming on to give you advice if you're an actor. We got them. It's happening over here, really happening now. I encourage you to also check out all of the other shows here at LA Talk Radio. They have everything. You don't know the right moves. You can't drop it like it's hot. There's a show for you. It's going to tell you how to do it. You have some mental problems. Oh, Dr. Michelle will fix you right up. So go to latalkradio.com and look at all the shows. Wonderful, wonderful. Now, we also have an app you can download for your iPhone and your Android phone, and that's at the bottom of the page, latalkradio.com. I have someone in here that could say that much better than I could, and I'm going to ask him to say, probably at the end of the show. Oh, actually, our two guests today, I didn't even know they had a voice like Don LaFontaine, but we were fooling around before the show started, and my God, they sound fabulous, and I'm going to have them do a little... maybe welcome to Question Reality or say something Priscilla sexy at the end of the show. So you have to wait for that. Now, as I have advertised, we will let a couple people call in. Not too many, because you know I like to talk. So I got to be talking most of the show. But I might be open to letting two or three people call in to talk to our guest today, who is... By the way, co-host, I always forget to announce him. Oh, he's got me again. I did forget about you every time I have him on.
I didn't even say it at the top because it's like, I trust her.
I wrote it.
Written down.
You know I have like my 20 pages. You know how prepared and organized and anal retentive I am. My sexy co-host, we have named him Ben or at least I've named you this, Ben Gingerlicious.
Gingerlicious.
Patton.
Gingerlicious.
Thank you. Yes. Thanks. My favorite applause. That's Albert with his little applause button. As you can tell, Ben is British and he has red hair, gorgeous red hair. So we call him a little ginger and he's Gingerlicious. So he is co-hosting today because he is a huge Star Trek, Star Wars, sci-fi guy. And he has the questions for our guest today.
I certainly do.
He does. Now, Ben, just real quick, producer, screenwriter, stand-up comedian, party host, and he's worked on several of my projects, and he is a joy to work with. So if you want somebody that is going to rock your party, BenPadden.net, you need to change that to .com.
You said that last week. Actually,
I'm going to say it until you change it.
I actually had the .com.
Who the hell has .net?
I had the .com, and then it lapsed, and I didn't get back to it in time, and someone else snatched up. This was like five,
what?
6 years ago. Someone else snatched it up.
Really?
Because I'm, as you may know, I'm a very much an in-demand kind of guy. So someone else snatched it up, so I had to switch to
.net. So there is a Ben Padden. It wasn't one of these people that bought it, and they just hold it like Coca-Cola.
No, I think it's now a store that sells fridge magnets.
No,
I might be lying, but
it could have been a sex item.
It's just,
kind of,
I don't think there's anything about the name Ben Padden that is particularly sexy, but I may be in the minority / majority on
know.
That one.
Now, the big thing today, he is the big thing. He is the one and the only Robert Meyer Burnett. Woo! Can you do Robert Meyer Burnett in the voice? Give me the voice, Ben.
Robert Meyer Burnett. That's not great. That wasn't great. That's not my best.
Robert Meyer Burnett, say that three times really fast, is of Star Trek Axanar, and it is directed by Christian Gossett. I hope I'm pronouncing that, or Gossett. At least that was on IMDb, which I was confused by because Mr. Alex Peter said in the email that you were the director, and I'm looking on IMDb. I'm like, wait a minute. This doesn't say, who are you on Star Trek Axanar?
Well, Christian directed Prelude to Axanar.
Oh.
And I will be directing the Axanar feature film.
Thank you so much, because I'm so confused.
I know, like, it's
so is there another page on IMDb that has you as the correct director? Because that
comes director, if you will.
I don't know. That's a good question. I have not really looked at I have a philosophy about the IMDb. I don't think you should put anything on the IMDb until it's been shot.
Mm.
Because everyone's like, oh, I got to get this on the IMDb.
They are,
and I'm
so
like,
excited.
You know, I had Free Enterprise 2 was on the IMDb for years and years and years. And it dogged me for a long time.
It haunts you. It haunts you.
And it still haunts me for more than one reason. But and I've always said, because everyone wants to see their name on the IMDb. And I'm like,
I do.
If you get it shot first, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the can. Then put it on the IMDb.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, when an actress or an actor is just starting out, there's like they're a bit player on something, they'll make an IMDb entry
first. That's true. I mean, I'm producing I usually just produce short films because I just don't have time for features. But a friend of mine asked me to be one of the producers on a feature film, and I didn't want to do it, but I did. And of course, I got to get the IMDb page up. Get the IMDb page up. So all of the actors are putting their, I'm like, the hell if I'm going to be sitting here putting each one, they can put their own, and now it's filling up like mad, and so they're very excited about their IMDb.
It's true.
It's a thing.
I have an IMDb page. I didn't realize this until a couple of years ago that I have an IMDb page.
Yeah, somebody must have entered.
Yeah, but it's for a web series that I did in 2009, which I didn't even think was going to have an IMDb entry, and there it is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow, well, good for you. You got a damn credit. Good. Woo. Now, I want to tell you, we got that cleared up. Robert, by the way, Robert Meyer Burnett is so hot, I can't even look over in his direction.
He is a
good-looking man. And his voice, oh, my Lord. I told him he's going to be recording some stuff for me. I'm going to have to record him more closely.
You know, it was all that money I gave you for the show.
That's right. As we said, directed by Robert Meyer Burnett. And was it written, though? Because, again, I'm getting this off
IMDb.
Who was it? I got Alec Peters.
Okay, here, this is sort of interesting. Alec Peters is the mastermind, and he was supposed to be here today. But
yes, he was.
He's in Calgary. Oh, he's north of the border.
Yes, he's supposed to be joining us, but alas, and apparently he is in the frozen outback tundra of Canada. And he said there's no internet.
You know, it's Calgary.
Damn,
what can you say?
Where the hell is he? I'm like, oh, that poor thing, and no internet. Where the hell is he? What kind of territory? He better have his phaser.
He's probably out location scouting for some Axanar landing party sequence we're going to shoot in Canada because someone's giving us money or something. You know.
Hey. Oh, well, he's here in spirit. That's all that matters. Now, when I went to research IMDb, I saw Alec Peters as the writer. So tell us who the writers are.
Well, Christian and Alec wrote Prelude to Axanar together.
Okay.
And Christian Gossett is known for The Red Star, his comic book The Red Star, which is it's a great comic book if you haven't seen it. Okay. And then Christian and Alec collaborated on an early version of the Axanar script, but now the script has been rewritten by Bill Hunt of the Digital Bits, one of the great, the go-to website, the Wall Street Journal of DVD and Blu-ray reporting on the web.
Wow.
So Bill and Alec have rewritten the script, page one rewrite, sort of at my behest. And I have to say, I just read the final draft, not the final, but the finished draft. It's incredible.
Wow.
I mean, I would dare say that it's in the top three Star Trek feature scripts.
Oh, my God. Written. Oh, my God. Well,
let me just tell you,
I like that you say that. People who are not familiar with Star Trek Axanar, let me just tell you briefly, and we have Robert to correct me if I'm wrong, but I took it off your website, so I guess it's right. This particular film takes place 21 years before the events of Where No Man Has Gone Before, the first Kirk episode of the original Star Trek. Oh, it's that wild turkey kicking in. Here we go. Axanar is the story of Garth of Izar. Not as you can tell, I'm looking at Robert for everything because I'm not a Star Trek person, but I'm going to wing it.
this is why you have me on the show.
That's right. It's the story of Garth of Izar, the legendary Starfleet captain who is Captain Kirk's hero. And Kirk himself, as you know, Ben, called Garth the model for all future Starfleet officers. And Garth charted more planets than any other captain and was the hero of the Battle of Axanar. Who knew? I didn't know. Everybody else knew. The story of which is required reading at the Academy. See, I didn't know that. And Axanar, now, to the audience, this is for you. The Star Trek fan, you, the Star Trek fan, Axanar is a return to the type of Star Trek that most of us grew up with or are familiar, because there are some young people who are just being turned on to Star Trek, and it has a hopeful future where mankind works with other races to explore the stars, correct?
That is true.
And basically, why don't you, in your own words, tell us what you feel the story is about that I...
Well, the feature version of Axanar, if you go to YouTube, you can watch Prelude to Axanar.
Lots of YouTube clips on there. I've watched like five or six. The Vulcan one is my favorite.
Oh, that's why. That's the one I directed.
Oh,
so thank
really?
You. That's the newest one, yeah.
I love that because I feel it gets right to it.
Yeah, that's the first. That's actually about 18 minutes in to the Axanar feature film, 18 minutes in from the beginning. And I felt, when we did our new Indiegogo campaign that's currently running at Save the Federation or KlingonVictory.com.
I am so glad. Hold on one sec, because I forgot. I am neglectful. StarTrekAxanar.com, and you can give a buck or two, a couple coins at the Indiegogo page. So just go to Indiegogo and type in Star Trek Axanar. They're on Facebook and Twitter.
And the Indiegogo is still going?
It's got another half month to go.
And you guys have already, not that you shouldn't donate, because they need all the money.
We need a lot more money.
You've already met your goal, so that tells you are successful. People know that this movie is going to be successful.
No, I was very flattered. I mean, I've always said my catchphrase is we're trying to make $100 million space epic for 1% of that budget.
Oh.
And the way we structured it is we're going to break the Axanar feature film into four parts.
Mm-hmm.
And each part basically costs about $330,000 to produce.
I would like
to do it all at once.
Oh, yeah.
But, it's an expensive proposition because what we're trying to do is there's a lot of Star Trek fan films on the web. And a lot of people say, well, how can you make a Star Trek movie if you don't own the franchise? Well, we don't. And so what we're doing is we can't make any money off this project at all.
Right.
We can't make any profit.
Right.
And for me personally, like I was just telling you earlier, I mean, I build spaceship models on the weekends anyway. Mm. And so I figured rather than build a spaceship model, why not bring all of my talents to bear and make a Star Trek feature film,
right.
You know, as a labor of love. And so...
Were you the one that approached Alec with the idea?
No, actually, this is Alec's brainchild. He was obsessed with a third season Star Trek episode from the original series called Whom Gods Destroy.
Mm.
And it's basically the character of Garth of Izar, as introduced in that episode, is sort of like the Joker. And they're in the Arkham Asylum of the Star Trek universe.
Okay.
And Garth of Izar was this incredible captain, but he learned an ability from the Antosians who helped him in a time of need, how to become a shapeshifter. And in doing so, in becoming a shapeshifter, we don't know what happened to him, but he went insane. Like, I always used to think to myself that he probably lost his identity. If you could become anyone, who are you? And it sort of drove him mad.
Mm.
But and then at the end of the episode, his mind is cleared. Kirk and Spock help him. And there's this great moment where Garth looks at Kirk and says, "Do I know you, sir?" With this incredible nobility. And Alec was obsessed by this.
Oh.
And he's like, "I love this character. And what was this man before he went nuts?"
It's this wonderful small moment that you don't... to extrapolate out from that is...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he started like 20 years ago. He started writing stories about Garth of Izar. And James Colley, who's sort of the grandfather, he's the Yuri Gagarin of Star Trek fan films. He's doing the Star Trek Phase 2.
Yes, that's where I know the name.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
he's the one that looks a little like Elvis.
Yes, yeah. he's a world-class Elvis impersonator.
Right.
Well, James invited Alec to play Garth back in 2010 in this vignette.
Hmm.
And so he did that, and I think that's where Alec got the idea of doing... Why don't we make a little Axanar movie?
Yeah.
And so he teamed up with Christian Gossett to make Prelude to Axanar, which was sort of a proof of concept. Like, could we make a feature film quality movie for not very much money?
And it looks absolutely incredible, I have to say. As a fan and as someone who grew up with Star Trek, both the original and the Next Gen and all of the
fanatic,
various spin.
Fanatic.
Yeah, I mean, you can't... Obviously, Comic-Con. On the radio, you can't see this, but I'm currently wearing a Deep Space Nine Voyager era... Star Trek badge and also an Avengers vest because why not? But yeah, like Star Trek's in my blood, and I loved Prelude to Axanar. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal.
You know, they recruited me. I edited Prelude to Axanar, and it was, I think my contribution is I'm deeply, deeply immersed in the Star Trek universe.
My husband too, Albert.
And I was a lifeline. I made a movie with William Shatner called Free Enterprise.
Did
which is a phenomenal comedy. Movie,
did
by the way.
Did you see that, Albert?
I love that film.
What's his name?
Eric McCormack's in it. And
Eric McCormack! I just kissed Eric McCormack!
Like, did
oh,
you?
Oh, yes! Last year! Oh, it was the
you
best
just
thing
love,
ever.
That's not
well,
just.
Eric was performing with my friend Joan Ryan, who's a Broadway singer, and they were at Catalina Bar and Grill. And
well,
you
sure.
know, he is my obsession. I said, hell, I'm going to jump that man. I just went over full force, and I grabbed him, put him on my little lap, and just gave him a big old kiss. He was there. He was there. He was
that's on YouTube,
he's
right?
He's a very... Yeah, it is on YouTube. Yeah, you can look it up. But he's a very talented actor and such a nice guy.
He was the first person we cast in the movie. He was literally the first
so
person who rolls in the door. And I watched him, and I'm like, you have got the part.
Yeah.
And he was tremendous. And he got to act with Shatner.
Did I see that? Did you ever force me into seeing that one? Of course,
no,
he forced me to see
it. We didn't see the whole thing. You just saw a clip of it.
Oh, my God.
It's a great film.
Well,
I wanted to
just briefly touch upon some of the actors because, I want to get them in there. I'm just a couple, but Richard Hatch is in it. He's Commander Karn, and
Karn the Undying is what they call him.
I actually remember him because I watch The Streets of San Francisco. He was like Inspector...
You replaced Michael Douglas.
Yeah,
right?
Yes. Yeah. Inspector Dan Robbins. That's right. Oh, yeah, I remember that. And he's best remembered, I think, for his portrayal of Apollo on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, he's actually one of the few actors who is in both the original Galactica and the remake by Ronald D. Moore.
Scott. I love Ben. BenPatton.net. BenPatton.net. He knows everything. This guy's a walking encyclopedia. Tony Todd, who is Admiral Marcus Ramirez, and he's best known for his chilling performance as Candyman. Did you see Candyman?
I haven't seen Candyman, but Tony Todd, he's also played several characters in Star Trek. He played Worf's brother in Next Generation. He played an elderly Jake Sisko in an episode of Deep Space Nine. He's been in an episode of Voyager as well, but I can't for the life of me remember which episode.
You don't have to remember.
All I know is Candyman. Now, Kate Vernon, beautiful, one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. She plays Captain Sonya Alexander, and she's probably best known for
Battlestar Electra.
You know what's cool about Kate Vernon, though? She also played James Spader's bitchy girlfriend in Pretty in Pink.
What? That was her? Oh, yeah. I don't even remember that. I was hot for James back in the day.
Oh.
Especially in that
Tumblr.com, I believe, is your personal website.
Hey, Jack's back's coming out on Blu-ray. I'm really excited about that.
She played Ellen Tye.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Ellen Tye.
She's great in Prelude.
Oh, yeah?
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Did you watch
Prelude, right?
No, I didn't see Prelude. I only saw the Vulcan episode.
Yeah, you need to watch the whole. It's phenomenal. It is.
What I love is in the feature script for Prelude, or for the Axanar feature film, she does something with her starship. That's one of the cool. When I read it, I'm like, this is one of the coolest moments of starship combat, like, ever.
Whoa!
As we call it, it's starship pornography.
I like that.
Yeah.
Starship pornography.
There's bulkheads and bridges and things going one way and another.
Yep. That's a pornography word. We can do that.
No, Sonya Alexander has a couple of great. That's why I really want to make the whole movie at once.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to want to wait to see it.
No.
But she is. She's got a great part.
She's a very good. Now, am I crazy? But my mother was a huge Falcon Crest fan. Was she on Falcon Crest? She was on Falcon Crest. I'm like 99%.
She might. I do not know that.
I think she was on Falcon Crest. Well, look that up. But if you weren't, Kate. I apologize.
No, she's amazing, and she's incredibly nice. She's actually really interesting. When we made Prelude, Prelude was basically actors sitting in a chair talking. And Christian acted as the interviewer because it's like a documentary from the future.
That's what I saw.
Yeah.
That was Prelude. They were each telling their involvement.
And she, what was really interesting, I was privy to all the different takes, and Christian would ask her to do different, she could just do a different inflection. It was amazing. She's an incredibly well-trained actress.
That wasn't scripted? That was ad-libbed?
No, it was scripted. Some of it was ad-libbed. There was Christian would get the script, but then he would allow the actors to. There's a great moment where Tony Todd says, drip drop in the script. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but it was awesome. And I cut it in there. Like, Christian
drip
and
I drop. I like that. That's Candyman style. He's going old school Candyman on you. Another actor, J.G. Hertzler, who plays Adam Samuel Travis, and he's best known for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Martok.
General Martok.
Yes.
He played a lot of other roles, but Martok, he's one of my favorite Klingons of all time.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
He's so good. So and when you first, I don't want to spoil Deep Space Nine if anyone hasn't seen it, but the way he's introduced is very interesting.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
There's a big twist to his
introduction. People are still discovering the show. Deep Space Nine, now more than ever, because it was very much ahead of its time as a serialized show, people are discovering it now on Netflix. If you're going to watch any Star Trek, my personal recommendation would be Deep Space Nine.
I watched Deep Space Nine back in the day when I was little.
I'm glad to hear it.
I don't remember any episode.
We should fix that.
I know. And I met Gary Graham, who's also in it. Admiral Sovol, perhaps best known for Alien Nation, one of my favorite shows, and Star Trek Enterprise. He played Vulcan Ambassador Sovol. We have a mutual friend, Jeff Rector, who I'm going to a rap party tonight.
So I was going to say, Jeff Rector's having a party tonight.
Are you going?
I can't, but maybe I will, since I know you're going.
I'm a screener. winner for the Burbank Film Festival. So it's a wrap party for that, for all the screeners.
Oh.
And probably some of his Playboy girls. I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know if that would interest you, but it's
It absolutely does.
Okay. Well, good. All right. Well, that's a perk for Jeff's parties. Next person, Alec Peters. He plays Captain Kelvar Garth.
It's his dream. You know, it's him living out his childhood fantasy of playing Captain Garth. That's what it is. That's what this entire project is about.
Yes.
But he does a great job. I mean, in Prelude, he has to hold his own against all these other actors, and I think he does. And
they're strong actors.
They are. And he actually ad-libbed a line at the end of Prelude where he basically says, we didn't sign up to be soldiers. You know, we're here to be explorers. And that's sort of the crux of what the whole idea behind Prelude to Axanar is that Earth is faced with this war with the Klingon Empire that they didn't ask for, but they have to accept the mantle of stopping it.
Wow.
So it's really the story of the feature film is the battle between Klingon warlord Karn and Kelvar Garth. Mm-hmm. And this, it all comes to a head and at this last ditch battle over the planet Axanar.
And the CGI is fantastic.
Yeah, that's done by Tobias Richter.
It looks just like, I swear, I was watching, I'm like, God, I feel like I'm watching Chris Pine in a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I mean, visually it looks, I would say, in places better than the Abrams movie.
How did they do that?
Well, all of our visual effects are done, with the space stuff, is done in Germany by a guy named, a wizard named, my favorite Starship pornographer, Tobias Richter. And his company, The Lightworks, and he gives good warp nacelle, is what we like to say.
Wow.
And, we're really going to push him to the limits with the Axanar feature, because we have to show massive starship combat, and there's all kinds of really... What's really interesting is Captain Garth, because he's an explorer, uses a lot of science and a lot of astral navigation as part of his battle tactics. So it's not just phasers and photon torpedoes. There's a lot of real science that goes into his victories.
Yeah, you definitely need a tech consultant of some sort, an expert.
Kind of like how you have me.
Exactly. You are the sci-fi guy.
And speaking of sci-fi guy, I actually have a question that is actually pertinent to this current thread now.
Oh, okay. I just want to get the last actor.
Oh, no, there's another. Oh, by all means, go for it. No.
Save it. Was it for a second?
I
wanted to get this guy in, Robert, because I am a huge... I'm a huge everything. But I'm a huge Plants vs. Zombie player. And... I wanted to give some credit to Orion Akaba, or is it Akaba?
Orion.
Because he plays Crazy Dave on Plants vs. Zombies, and he is uncredited on IMDb, which I'm annoyed by.
Well, we have to rectify that, because what's really cool about him
is great. He goes.
He's the narrator of Prelude to Axanar. And if you're a Star Trek fan, the narrator that he's playing is actually John Gill. Now, this is a very deep cut if you're a classic Star Trek fan. But there's an episode in the second season called Patterns of Force that it's all about a guy, a historian named John Gill, who finds this moribund culture and decides to sort of kick it into high gear to use Germany's National Socialism of the 1930s as a way to sort of galvanize the culture, which turns out to be one of the most monumentally bad ideas in the history of the galaxy.
Who'd have thought?
I think that was one of your favorite episodes, Albert. He loved that one.
The Ecosians, and of course they have their neighboring planet, Zaon, and they decide that the Zaons are basically... can be exterminated because National Socialism needs something to do with itself. And what better than to exterminate the neighboring planet's population?
Do you remember your question?
I do, because I have it all written down.
This is John Gill before he went to this planet.
Oh, we got to get him credit, because I'm Plants vs. Zombies. When he comes... That's what he does. That's his dialogue.
It's all non-specific.
It's non-specific.
I love that you just gave him the love. I hope he listens to this podcast.
We got to get him credit. Go ahead.
Okay.
Take it over.
So obviously you managed to pull together an exceptional cast of Star Trek alumni. And indeed, a lot of Star Trek fan films and fan series do tend to attract interest from actors who've worked on the show. What do you think it is about Star Trek that makes these actors want to revisit that universe, even in an unofficial capacity?
Well, you know, I think that the very gist of what Star Trek is, the fact that it's optimistic, it shows a bright future for humanity. And also when you work on a Star Trek show, it's really a family. And there's this extended family of players that go to conventions together and they can be on other shows together. And there's also a fan filmmakers are very we're the biggest, most passionate fans of all. So to go after these actors and get them to come back is sort of it's a coup for all of us.
Yeah.
But unlike I think what's different with Axanar is we have Gary Graham, of course, playing the same character he played Ambassador Saval. But we've created a whole new set of characters. Like, we've got actors that are coming back, and you remember them from Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek. But they're totally original characters to Axanar, like Marcus Ramirez, the leader of Starfleet, who becomes the leader of Starfleet during the 4 Years of War. He's a brand new character that we made up.
Mm.
And I think that's the real attraction with Axanar, is people, they believe our new characters are, quote-unquote, real, as far as the Star Trek universe goes. And I think that's been the real attraction. And because the actors are so good, mm-hmm. I mean, all of these actors have been at their 30 years of acting experience. People believe, at least even I, as I was editing this and getting the footage in, I believe this was real Star Trek.
I do too. And I, again, everybody knows I'm not a sci-fi person, but I was watching the actors tell their story of their involvement, and I said, damn, they believe this shit.
Yeah, well,
that was so real.
Well, it is a documentary, of course, which means
it's
true.
Exactly.
It's absolutely true.
It's true. Right. It's acted in the way of a documentary.
Yeah.
And so when you see the trailer, you'll know.
But I should point out that Prelude to Axanar is sort of a primer, but the Axanar feature film is a movie.
It is a movie.
It's not done in the style of... If you look at the Vulcan scene, it's on the IndieGoGo page at SaveTheFederation.com or KlingonVictory.com, depending on who you are rooting for.
Oh, Lord.
You can
Either
see
way,
that
you
scene.
Get the money.
Right. Well, no, the fans get the money because all the money will go to making this film.
Yes.
Of course.
Now,
we need a lot more.
You need a lot more. Now, what can you tell us about any funny things or bloopers that happened during the shoot, or are you going to have a blooper reel or a behind-the-scenes thing?
There will be. We just finished the Prelude to Axanar Blu-ray, and you can't buy it. We can't sell it. That people who gave donations to the first Prelude Kickstarter, it's one of their perks. And then once you've donated to Axanar, you get access to the donor store, and you can get, for your donation, you'll be able to get the Blu-ray. On this first Blu-ray, there's no bloopers, but we're doing a big deluxe Blu-ray set for the Axanar feature where we're going to have bloopers from Prelude.
I donated.
Can you
and
swear
I got...
on this show?
Yes. Oh, fuck.
There's a great moment where Tony Todd says, "Those Klingon motherfuckers."
Yes.
And, you know, I wanted to use that at some
point. Oh, yes. You did it now. Yes, I actually donated, and I did get an email, and it told me, I don't know what my password is. I didn't get one, but I'll find out about that. But that was really cool. I like how there's so many projects on Indiegogo. When you donate, you never know where the hell your money goes. And what I like about your project is that every week I'm getting an update.
Oh, we overshare.
Whoever sends that out is great.
Nothing wrong with, especially if you're doing a fan project, the more transparent you are, the less likely, you know, the big bad are gonna likely to come and say,
"Oh, it's funny." Yeah. Reading like on the net, there are some people saying, like on Reddit or Tumblr or wherever, that look like we're buying new cars and we're going on vacations, and it's like, why would we do that? I mean, we want to put all the money into the movie.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I had a Honda that exploded. Now I'm driving a used Hyundai, and Alex got his car, and Diana has her car. I mean, it's like, why? We want to make this movie. And I think if you watch Prelude to Axanar and you watch the Vulcan scene, the first scene that we released from the Axanar feature, you'll see where the money's going.
Yeah.
It would be counterproductive.
Don't generally take your money and run. Most of the people that contribute, they're well off enough.
Also, we sort of have the Tiffany of perks. Like, if you buy our products, I mean, if you donate and you get our products, the patches, which are beautifully designed by Thomas Maroney from Star Trek Online, I mean, we have the best perks ever. Like, if you buy our DVDs or get the soundtrack album, pardon me, donate.
Donate.
Can't buy them. But, and so we overspend If we're guilty of anything, it's overspending on our perks.
Oh, that's great.
Because we want them to be better.
Yes.
The perks are phenomenal.
You get so many.
Oh, yeah, we do. And we keep thinking at more. Like, when I saw Diana Kingsbury, who is our, as we like to say, our goddess of fulfillment, she had this new t-shirt designed for the Axonar feature. It's, I think, at the $125 level. It's such a cool, clever shirt. When I looked at this, I was like, Diana, this is, as a lifelong Star Trek fan, I'm like, this is dope.
Yeah.
I love this shirt.
It'll become a collector's
and
item.
And I'm like, I want one. And she's like, well, where's your $125? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, if the production would pay me, maybe I could get some money there.
That's right.
I have to have a day job, you know.
You have to have the day. Now, other than the telling of the story, you know, Axonar takes place 21 years before the events, blah, blah, blah. What do you hope is the most important message within the movie that the audience will really be touched by?
I think that two cultures, even though they are very, very far apart on the ideological spectrum, can find a common ground and make peace and realize that it is better to move forward together. We are stronger together than if we try to burn each other to crisps. And I think that's at the very core of what the Axonar film is about. And it ends, like, that's why, you know, I didn't write the script, but as a lifelong Star Trek fan, and I'm talking, I mean, I read all the novels. I'm deep into Star Trek. And when I read the script, I'm like, this is one of the great Star Trek stories of all.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And it's, people have said, well, Star Trek really isn't about war. And I'm like, really? All the way back to the first season of the original series, there's an episode called Balance of Terror that introduces the Romulans. And in that episode, it's so good.
It's fantastic.
But the Romulans in that episode are compelled to look for weakness. If they see weakness in a culture, they will go after it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've seen that the Federation has these border outposts, and they're fairly weak. So the Romulans penetrate our defenses, and they realize we can go home and we can march right through here and take over the Federation if we want. And Mark Leonard, who plays the Romulan commander, is like, oh, great. You know, my gift to the homeland, another war. Do we have to do this all the time?
Yes.
And his best friend says, well, if there's not weakness.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I write these questions based on, you know, what comes out in my mind. But I wrote this gloom and doom. I'm so glad. I feel that sci-fi films, and again, I'm not, you know, overly, but I'm forced to watch sci-fi films. But I feel that sci-fi films, for the most part, they fight the gloom and the doom, or they fight gloom and doom. There's gloom, there's doom. And the dark winnings, they sort of poke around and they find the pitfalls and the quicksand, and they just go all kinds. Like Dr. Strangelove. Remember Dr. Strange?
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Yeah, Soylent Green. Blah. These draw attention from millions of people towards the doomsday scenarios, right? Which I feel. And do you feel that those films, or our films as a people in sci-fi, do you feel that our efforts are futile with trying to show both aspects? Are we here today because of them?
Well, you know, look.
Because we show what it's like, what it could be, the future.
I have words on that, but...
No, please go.
No, by all means.
Well, I was going to say, you know, dystopian science fiction movies have been a staple of sci-fi for a long time, whether it's literary sci-fi or cinematic sci-fi or televised sci-fi. But one of the things about Star Trek has always been its optimistic future. Gene Roddenberry was a secular humanist, and he believed that he was kind of like the way Carl Sagan is, you know, and Carl Sagan's one of my heroes. And I really do believe mankind is awesome. Gene Roddenberry used to say aliens did not build the pyramids. Humans built the pyramids because they're awesome and they can figure this stuff out. Sure, someone's going to go, yeah, but they use slave labor to do it. Well, okay.
We're going to make mistakes along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I believe in mankind. I believe in a better world, because look where we are today. In the last 100 years, human life expectancy has jumped 35 years. There's incredible advances in healthcare, as long as people want socialized medicine, I suppose. But it's amazing what mankind has done. Look in the last 25 years, the rise of the internet, the way we can communicate more than we ever have before. Of course,
look
we hear
all the medical technology that people got ideas from watching Star Trek.
It's astonishing. And I think that if we would put our heads together, and we're getting better all the time. Humanity is absolutely getting better all the time. And I think that if you, sure, you can concentrate on the downside of things, but look at what happened. Marriage equality.
Mm.
10 years ago, there was many of my gay friends who've said, you know, I couldn't, 10 years ago, I could not have believed that we would have marriage equality, that our president, our black president would stand in front of the nation and vote for marriage equality.
Now, arguably,
that's a Roddenberry future happening right before our eyes.
Arguably, Kirk had the first interracial kiss.
He
is
did.
That true?
That is true. And it was a third season episode called Plato's Stepchildren.
Mm.
And it was the first. And also, if you watch Deep Space Nine, there was a race called the Trill that were symbiotes that were put into human hosts. So they would live in both male and female hosts throughout their lives. So they would take both male and female lovers. Gender was very fluid to them.
Right.
There was a great episode in Next Generation called The Outcast,
mm-hmm.
where Riker falls in love with a genderless being that becomes scandalous.
Yeah.
The kiss that the Deep Space Nine situation you're referring to was also, I think, the first same-sex kiss on American television.
Yes, I think it might have been.
Yeah.
And I think it was in Rejoined, the episode Rejoined.
Yeah, yeah, such a great episode.
And I believe that Nichelle Nichols was at a point where she was going to quit Star Trek.
That's right.
And was it Dr. Martin Luther King? He had a conversation with her and he said, you are carving out the path for African-American females. Not only African-American females, but females in general.
Right. I mean, she was, at that time, she was a command officer on the bridge of the Enterprise. I mean, she was one of the top ranking people on the ship.
Right.
And back in 1966, when Star Trek debuted September 8th, 1966, that was unheard of.
Yeah.
And there was a lot going on in Star Trek has always been best when it's allegorical and sort of has a way of reflecting back on our culture today.
Right.
And Star Trek did that a lot. Race relations and Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, Vietnam and A Private Little War. There was all kinds. It even predicted the rise of our computer technology and computers running everything. There's an episode called The Taste of Armageddon,
uh-huh.
where computers fight a war.
Yes. And was that the one where they were all crunched in?
That was
By Any Other Name.
With
Rojan.
With all the people on the outside. There were so many people.
That was
The Mark of Gideon.
Yeah, Mark of Gideon.
That was one of my favorites. And The Man Must Continue.
That's Metamorphosis, second season.
I knew that.
I'm amazed.
Nancy Hedford.
You're pulling these quotes.
Yeah, these are like, wow.
This is him forcing me to watch Star Trek Marathon.
I'm impressed.
Star Trek Marathon.
To add on to what is being said, I think that there's just as much optimistic and hopeful science fiction out there as there is dystopian and nihilistic science fiction. Case in point, Doctor Who. I think it was Craig Ferguson, formerly of The Late Late Show, who said that Doctor Who is a show about the triumph of intellect and romance over brute force and cynicism. And so,
wow, that's an awesome quote.
Isn't that a fantastic way to describe Doctor Who? And I think it's also a fantastic way to describe Star Trek a lot of the time.
Because, absolutely.
Both Star Trek and Doctor Who, one of the things that they both have in common, and this is why both of these shows have endured for 50 plus years, is that they are both fundamentally about hope and sort of self-improvement. And I think that's a fundamental part of science fiction. As much as, you get to the end of Planet of the Apes and it's like, it was Earth all along, blah, blah, that's important. But just as important, if not more so, is the idea that we make it, we survive, you know. The Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, in his second episode has that line where it's like, you think that you're going to get killed by cholesterol and asteroids and bad television, but you don't stop to think that maybe you make it, maybe you survive. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just as important an aspect of science fiction.
I mean, we have, right now, we have probes taking pictures of Pluto. You know, the United States is now, we've now mapped the entire solar system. And who did that? Talented men and women that spent countless hours making the kind of technology that allowed us to do that.
And also Brian May, who worked on that project.
Right. And so, but you have a supercomputer in your pocket.
Yeah.
You have you carry around computers that are much more advanced than anything the space shuttle or the Apollo program ever sent into space. And we live in that world. We live in a sci-fi world, and we can either choose to enjoy it and embrace it and add to that, or we can wallow in our own self-pity. Which
yeah. Where's sci-fi going to be in 100 years from now if we don't blow ourselves up?
That's
or
a really,
think that we're demigods.
That's an interesting question. I mean, if Ray Kurzweil's singularity happens and we all become artificial intelligences, I can't even imagine where science fiction is going to be. But science, Brian Aldiss, who's a British science fiction writer, described science fiction as a way to sort of make sense of this world with our confused state of knowledge that we live in now. And I think that it's hard to say where we're going to be in 100 years. I think about where we were 100 years ago. I mean, planes.
People would think we were demigods 1,000 years ago with the technology we have.
Clark's law is any sufficiently advanced magic is indistinguishable from magic. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable
Absolutely.
From magic.
I mean, and you think about where we have come. I mean, every time I go to a Renaissance fair, I think to myself, why are we celebrating this period of time? Who really wanted to live here? I mean, it was dirty. It was disgusting.
Yes, no deodorant.
Actually, I have an answer to that. White people.
No, and I love how they just romanticize all those films from back in the 15, 1600s. And I'm thinking, oh, no.
Yes,
those
they were making a lot of movies in the 15, 1600s.
No, I'm thinking, I'm looking at Pride and Prejudice, and I'm looking at all of those. You
know, the court jester.
Yeah.
That's why I love Game of Thrones so much, because like, it just sucked to live back then.
Yes!
I would much rather live in a Star Trek future with beautiful, yes. buxom women who clearly are not thin as a rail. They look like
yes.
real women.
Mm.
They're scientists, they're starship commanders, they travel around the universe and make the world a better place. I do
yes.
not want to live in King's
yes.
Landing.
No.
It's the 21st century and women can be Ghostbusters. It's a magical time.
It is a magical time.
That's true. Now, I know you're not the executive producer of the film and the Muddy Seeker and all that, but I don't expect you to have all the answers, but to the best of your knowledge, when you... an independent filmmaker.
Yes.
Plan for such a huge undertaking. Do you just dive right in and start working on it, or do you have a little bit of money to kind of get you going, or do you, because you have such a specialty and you know that the fans are going to get aboard, you're like, I know the money's coming, let's just invest our own money.
Yes, it's we're trying to do this anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, the Vulcan scene that you can see on the Indiegogo page at SaveTheFederation.com or KlinganVictory.com, that was something that I, you know, while I was editing another film, while I had a day job that's paying me, Axanar is not paying me money. I'm
right.
not working on it full time.
Right.
And, you know, I spent days planning that sequence. I actually took these two action figures out. I took a Spock figure from the Star Trek 09 movie and a Dana Scully figure. And I did what's called a story reel, which is kind of like what animation does. I can't draw.
Yeah.
So I shot every angle and I cut together the scene with these still images of the action figures. And I read both parts. And I could plan it. I could show it to Tobias Richter, our visual effects artist. And I'm like, okay, we need this virtual environment. My cinematographer, Milton Santiago, could look at it and we could talk about, okay, how are we going to shoot this scene? We knew we wanted to shoot it in natural sunlight. So I worked on this for weeks before we ever got to set. Because when you're on a movie set, what people don't understand is you can quantify and put a dollar amount to every second.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say a day costs you on a big studio film $150,000, you're shooting for 12 hours. You can back in that $150,000 to how many seconds are going to tick by in those 12 hours. So every time you're on a set and time is ticking by that you're not shooting and you're not getting what you want, you're screwing yourself.
Yeah.
So we on Team Axanar are meticulous planners.
Mm.
And especially for me as the director of this film, I'm bringing to bear everything a $100 million studio movie would do. I'm just doing it for 1% of that budget. So the more I plan and the more I design that whole Vulcan shoot, you know, from scratch.
Is this movie going to be a feature film, or is it going to be for television?
Well, we can't. We're going to make it under the guild rules, such as the SAG New Media contract, which means that we can only ever release it to the web.
Okay.
We can't do anything else with it. And since we can't make money, the donors are donating to see the movie, and then they get the perks that come with a certain donation level. But once we've made the film, that's it. We can't make
it.
We don't own Star Trek. It's Paramount's. Paramount, we sort of all of these Star Trek fan films, all of them are a labor of love. And as long as I think they celebrate the franchise,
right,
and as long as they add to the brand, I think that Paramount and CBS sort of leave us alone. But if we were to ever cross that line, yeah, and make money,
right,
I mean, it would be my dream that this movie would be so good.
Yeah, what is your hope for
I mean, I want to show what I can do. I mean, I made one movie 16 years ago and it didn't make any money, so my directing career has been moribund ever since. I mean, I was making, you would have liked the Femme Fatale series I worked on for Cinemax.
Oh, okay.
But I produced a few things, but I want to show what I can do. I want to bring everything that I've learned over the last 26 years in the business to bear and show that I can do more.
Right.
One of the key things about fan film, because I also did a Doctor Who fan film that launched early this year called Dalek Gary. I'm not going to do the whole pitch because that's incredibly selfish.
I already want to see it just because of the title.
It's fantastic. But one of the things you have to remember when you're making a fan film, and I don't think this is something that people who aren't aware of the production process, is you're parking your car in somebody else's spot.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to do anything to piss off the person whose parking spot it is. So you absolutely cannot make any money off it. It's got to be done for the love of the thing.
Well, what's interesting is that, like, Lucasfilm came out in front of the fan films, and they put down guidelines and rules. They made certain sound effects available, and they even went so far as to start a fan film award ceremony that they do every year, that they're starting up again. And they even released fan films when they released the box set of the six current Star Wars movies on Blu-ray. They put fan films on that set. And they acknowledge that. The problem is there's really nobody at CBS that is overseeing Star Trek. There's a guy named John Van Sitters who does consumer products, who's a great guy, great person to deal with. His whole department is amazing. But there's nobody there that is watching over any of this.
Right.
You know, there's licensing, of course, but there's not a, like, creative executive looking over Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And it comes along, like, Paramount makes the J.J. Produced films. But there's been no Star Trek for 10 years on television.
So after we make Star Trek Axanar, what are we going to do with it? Where can we see it? Is it going to be in limited release?
No, it'll be just like Prelude to Axanar. It'll be on YouTube.
Okay, and we
that's
can watch
it
on YouTube. And probably, what about any of the other distributed VOD, Redbox, Amazon?
Again, can't
you
do that
do
because
that?
That's for that's
film.
For
you
profit.
Can't do it. Can't,
unless my hope would be that the movie would be so good that Paramount Home, next year is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
Other than the new movie, the new Justin Lin.
Star Trek Beyond,
that I'm actually really excited to see because I really like Justin Lin's Fast and the Furious movies, which are kind of like Star Trek with racing cars, multi-ethnic.
Simon Pegg's co-writing.
Yes. And I think it could be great. But CBS doesn't have anything ready to go. They'll repackage all the Blu-rays. I worked on the Star Trek The Next Generation Blu-rays for 3 years doing all the special features, but there's nothing. So I would hope if we were able to finish Axanar, I'm saying this is my dream scenario. Like, when I go to bed at night, this is what I dream.
Okay.
That we make Star Trek Axanar, we get the phone call from CBS Home Entertainment, and they're like, you know what, Rob? We want to pick this up as a negative pickup.
Yeah, do your voice. Do your voice.
We want to pick up Star Trek Axanar, and we want to release it on home video for the 50th anniversary. I mean, that's my dream. That's my dream, Ray Kinsella.
Another
that's
great dream that I'm sure would also be good is someone coming to you and saying, we love Star Trek Axanar. We want you to make a new Star Trek TV series.
Well, that's an even better dream.
Yes!
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, no, I think what's interesting is that we all... That's in the back of our minds. I mean, we would like to make a canon show, a show set in the prime Star Trek universe that is not in an alternate universe, but our universe.
Okay. We got to go, but I have one more question for you real quick. What is the best and worst piece of advice that you got when making Star Trek Axanar?
The best piece of advice probably is to follow your own instincts. Don't allow... There's so much opinion about Star Trek on the web. If you go down that rabbit hole, you'll shudder. You'll lie in a corner somewhere, quivering. Mm. So you have to follow your own instincts and go with your gut. And know that between Alec and I, we know more about Star Trek than anyone else, so why should we listen to any other voices?
There you go.
And I think the worst piece of advice... the worst piece of advice would probably be to put people from Charon from the episode Let That Be Your Last Battlefield into the movie. The people that are black on one side and white on the other. Wouldn't it be great to see them again?
No. No, it wouldn't.
No, I'm good. I'm done. I'll go to what I need out of that.
Yeah, that was one of my least favorite episodes. Okay, so what, real quick, what is it for you next? What projects are you going to be working on?
Well, I just finished editing a really cool low-budget science fiction thriller called Paradox that was written and directed by Mike Hurst that stars Zoe Bell from Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
Oh.
And we literally are just wrapping that up. And then I'm starting editing a movie called I Know Where Lizzie Is.
Oh, I like that. Do you only direct sci-fi? Do you direct everything?
No, I'll direct.
Do you do comedies?
I do. Free Enterprise was a comedy.
Okay.
At this point, I'll direct my way out of a paper bag.
So Robert is available. He is available.
Well, hopefully not, because I got to make action on it.
Oh, that's right. Well, not now.
If you go to SaveTheFederation.com and KlingonVictory.com and donate.
Okay. Yes, donate. I donate it, and I can't wait to get my package. And thank you. And
that's all the time.
Okay.
We have.
So, Robert, give me your exit to your fans about Star Trek XNR, but include my name. Let's see how creative you are.
I just can't thank Priscilla enough for letting me go out onto the airwaves and promote Star Trek XNR, a lifelong dream project for me. Priscilla makes your dreams come true.
Metamorphosis. Ben, real quick.
Ditto.
Okay, there you go. StarTrekAxonR.com. Check it out. Donate. It's on Indiegogo, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Thank you, Robert Meyer Burnett.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.